What's up, gamers, and welcome to Lost at Sea Gaming. I am Hulking Yoda, the captain of this ship, the SS Gamer, and you have just stepped into my captain's quarters, my weekly gaming update show where I talk about my favorite gaming news topic of the past week, discuss what games I've been playing, give tips on some of those games, as well as issue a weekly relevant gaming-related decree. This week, it's all about the reveal of PSVR 2's price, release date, and what games we can hopefully expect to play in its launch window. So let's talk about it and dive right into the episode in my news catch of the week. Gamers, ever since the PSVR 2 has been announced, I have been very much wanting to get my hands on this device, pining over every piece of information that Sony has allowed us to be a part of, and vowing to myself and to you listeners, if you've been listening to me for a while now, that even though I allowed the PlayStation 4 generation and PSVR to pass me by, I was not going to let that happen on the PS5 and the PSVR 2 experience. So here we are. We have finally gotten the two biggest pieces of information I think all of us that are interested have been waiting for. And those pieces of information are obviously the release date of the experience as well as the cost of that experience. Now, we're going to talk about that and we're going to talk about all the other details that Sony released this past week in their announcement. And first up, the most important one probably is the release date. When can we expect to see this thing, to get our hands on it, to experience it, to play it? Well, that release date is February 22nd of 23, 2-2-2-2-3, as it were. And just a few short months away, we will be able to experience Horizon Call of the Mountain, among other, many other games, actually, that Sony announced this past week as well. But for what price? What is the cost of admission? Well, that cost, if you're looking to get the PSVR 2 headset, the Sense controllers and stereo headphones in your basic bundle offer, that's going to run you $550 US. 550. And there is a bundle offer that Sony will offer in the form of everything I just mentioned, plus the Call of the Mountain game. That's going to retail for $600. So extra $50 for Horizon, not too shabby if you ask me. And it's important to note, just want to put that out there, you got to have a PS5 console in order to use the PSVR 2 headset and accessories. So it's not something that is backwards compatible or cross-gen compatible with PS4. You got to have a PS5 in order to utilize this device. Now, in addition to the headset bundles, you can also pre-order individual Sense controller charging stations. Obviously, you're going to want to make sure those things stay charged. And in my opinion, I think it's actually pretty cool, these chargers, because they actually don't require you to plug them into a USB port like every other charger does. But the most important part about all of this, outside of the price and the release date, none of it would matter if it wasn't for the games, the experiences that we're going to have with this device. So what are the games that we can look forward to? Obviously, we've already talked about Horizon Call of the Mountain, which just looks awesome and honestly terrifying. I've said it before when I've talked about the game. I can only imagine what it's going to feel like to be fully immersed in that world of Horizon in full virtual reality and have those machines running after you and coming at you. Oh, it's just going to be very intense, I can imagine, but a lot of fun. And when we look at the games that Sony has mentioned, first up we have Crossfire Sierra Squad, which is a tactical first-person shooter. Should be pretty cool from a VR standpoint. The Light Brigade, Cities VR Enhanced Edition, Cosmonius High, Hello Neighbor Search and Rescue. And I got to be honest with you, Hello Neighbor, if you guys have ever played any of those games, that, oh man, that could be pretty intense in VR, because essentially you're trying to sneak around and stay out of sight and not get caught. You sometimes get in a chase sequence with, it could be pretty intense, I could see right now in VR. Jurassic World Aftermath Collection, which I'll get back to in a second. It's probably my most anticipated game in this announcement outside of Horizon. Pistol Whip VR, Zenith The Last City is kind of an MMO, if you will. After the Fall, a post-apocalyptic cooperative experience, and Tentacular, which is a very unique-looking indie-style kind of a game. Now, the other title that was mentioned that kind of caught my eye, in addition to Jurassic Park, or excuse me, Jurassic World Aftermath Collection, that was the Dark Pictures anthology Switchback. So I'll talk about that, then we'll talk about Jurassic World. So Dark Pictures anthology, if you didn't know, they are just about a week away or so, a week and a half away of releasing the next game in the series and the final game of season one, as the developer Supermassive puts it, The Devil and Me. Well, the three previous games they've released, last year's House of Ashes, and then before that, Little Hope and Man of Medan. So that is the Dark Pictures anthology and the titles that have released so far in that series. Well, with this new title, I was like, man, this is going to be awesome. This is going to be an exclusive VR experience that's catered for PSVR 2 in that Dark Pictures universe. Well, it is that, but it is not at all what I wanted it to be. And what I mean by that is, if you look at the trailer, you read the description, it is genuinely an on-the-rails roller coaster ride through locations and scenes and interactions with enemies or and or characters from all four of those aforementioned games. So it was very disappointing for me to find that out, because number one, I'm not very big on the rails kind of games. I like to have that freedom of movement and to do kind of what I want to do, right? Now, if I'm at the arcade, that's different. But at home, I really don't prefer that style of game. And especially when I think about the Dark Pictures and how that is a horror experience. And I feel like a lot of, if not every single one of those games, it's about building the tension and the suspense and the fear. And I'm sitting here thinking that I'm going to get there and creep through this haunted ghost ship. And I'm going through and I'm actually immersed in that ghost ship, thinking that, oh my God, what's around the corner? And it's as if I'm actually there. Well, maybe aspects of that could still be true, but if I'm on the rails and I'm in a roller coaster cart or something that's similar to that or likening to that, I don't feel like the experience is going to be that enjoyable for me. So very disappointed to see that's what that is. I'll keep an eye on it and see maybe some reviews when it comes out and see if it's something that I'm actually still interested in checking out. But that one really disappointed me, but it did catch my eye. But the other eye catcher for me was Jurassic World Aftermath Collection. Now, this was actually previously released as two different parts on other VR platforms, but it's now actually going to be released as one collection for PSVR 2. And the premise of it, it's actually set between Jurassic World, the first movie, and Fallen Kingdom, the second movie. And you're going to play as this character that basically crash lands on the island of Isla Nublar, where the Jurassic World Park was, and now you have to try and survive until somebody comes and rescues you. And the trailer that I saw, I got to be honest. Initially, I was immediately turned off because the graphics are cel-shaded, which I would have preferred to have realistic graphics within that setting and that world. But looking at what the gameplay is and how terrifying it seems like it might be, but that also to me is fun. Terrifying is fun because I love being scared and love horror. So the gameplay sequences it showed off, I mean, there's a couple puzzles here or there, but also it looks like a lot of the game is hiding from or running from velociraptors and hearing those clicking noises and those calls they make, which are just terrifying sound effects to me. And then also you got a Dilophosaurus that just burst its head through a vent in one of the shots in the trailer, and T-Rex is there. So bottom line is, I think it could actually be a lot of fun. I'm a massive, massive fan of the Jurassic Park and World films, and I am actually really excited for this. This is right up there, just under my excitement for Horizon Call of the Mountain. So I'm very much looking forward to this experience. It is still one that I want to share in. But there are just some details about it that I want to discuss further with you when it comes to the pricing and other things that I have questions about, which we'll get to later in the episode in my Captain's Decree segment. But that is this week's Catch of the Week, PSVR 2, February 22nd, 23, for $550 for your base bundle, or $600 if you want to get it with Horizon Call of the Mountain. Now let's go open up my Captain's Log and see what games I've been playing. Gamers, when opening up my Captain's Log, as I turn the first page, the first game I want to talk about with you that I played this past week, I finally, for the first time, this is now the third entry into this game series. Over the course of multiple generations of consoles, I finally tried out the Bayonetta series, and I'm here to talk to you about my first hour in Bayonetta 3. Gamers, as I said, I played 1 hour this past week, which probably doesn't sound like a whole lot, into Bayonetta 3. But in my defense, the Switch is the console I play before bed. So either I pass out or I only got about half an hour or so that I actually get in of playtime. So over the course of a few nights, I did get an hour into it. And, you know, Bayonetta is a series that, like I said, I've never jumped into before this one. I've always been kind of curious, even going back to the 360 when the first one released. I was interested and kind of kept up on the previews. It looked, and the previews read as if it were very much similar to Devil May Cry, which I am a massive fan of that series. So it kept my interest, but there was just something about it, for whatever reason, that never interested me enough to pull the trigger on it and try it out. Well, obviously, years go by, a second entry comes, I don't try that one either. And here we are, and I finally got my hands on a Switch and the Switch OLED last October, and Nintendo was really pushing Bayonetta 3 coming out this year. So you know what? Once I was looking into it and seeing the trailers for it and reading about it, I'm like, man, this actually sounds really good. So I'm going to finally try out this series and give it a shot. It's always been talked about positively. I'm going to give it a shot. So came out, ordered it, got it. And this first hour, let me just tell you, I thoroughly enjoyed my first hour's experience with the Bayonetta franchise and this game specifically. You know, you kind of start out at the very beginning and there's a prologue. And I mean, I'll be honest, again, I've never played these games. I know nothing about the characters or stories. So it's kind of like it started in the ending of the second game. I don't know that for sure, but that's how it felt. Like it was almost as if the second game ended on a cliffhanger and this third game is starting in the middle of that cliffhanger. So I had no idea what was going on. I could kind of piece together some of the things that were happening, obviously, but you go through that prologue and it's kind of a way to give you a tutorial on some of the combat aspects and features in the combat system of the game. So that was pretty cool. But once we got past that prologue, gamers, I got to tell you, it transitions to quite possibly the best, and I mean this 100% sincerity, quite possibly the best opening credits that I have ever experienced in any game. It was just absolutely amazing the way that the development team had structured this opening credits sequence, because it was essentially a cutscene with, you know, interspersed with directed by and produced by, written by, just the way they did it, the amazingness of the camera shots and the action and different things that were happening on screen. It was fun, funny, interesting. It was great. It really drew me in, very much so that by the time I actually was controlling Bayonetta after it all, I wanted to actually just watch a movie of Bayonetta and what was going on in all this amazing world that looks like has been created in the series. But once I did get back control of her, I started to have an initial concern that I'll share with you. And that was, oh man, you know, obviously I've never played these games. I don't know anything about them really, but all I'm doing so far, it seemed like for the first good bit of the game, all I was doing was combat, and it was just combat in between cutscenes. There was no exploration or a world to travel around in and look around, and just there was no time to breathe. It felt like it was just cutscene for 5 minutes and then combat for 5 minutes into another cutscene for 5 minutes. And it just didn't stop, because you go past the prologue, you go through the first chapter, and that's all it was. Well, I will be here to tell you that if you had those concerns, or if you haven't played it or know nothing about Bayonetta as I didn't, and me telling you that is kind of pushing you away, I'm here to clarify that was not the case. It didn't hold up that way, did not stay that way. By the second chapter, things opened up. And I was finally able to have this open area, pretty massive open area, to run around and platform and figure out these different challenges that were there in the world for me. Sure, there was enemies to fight and have combat and stuff here or there, but it wasn't like it was just cutscenes and combat, which is what my fear was. So once I started going around and collecting orbs and doing the challenges and just exploring the world that was around there and finding different secrets and continuing the story as I progressed through this area, I mean, graphically too, on the Switch, it was just really impressive. I had a lot of fun with it, and I very much look forward to continuing it. Probably the biggest detriment to the game and my experience so far would have to be the photo mode. If you guys know me, I love losing hours in photo mode in any game that has it. And this game has one, but man, either I'm just missing something and it's just not clicking with me, or it's just poorly put together. The way you try to position the camera, and I mean, they got a lot of options that I like too. That's what sucks, is they have the filters and the borders and frames, and they have all these different things, logo, but just that control of the camera is very important to me. And it was just not as user-friendly as I feel that it should have been. But regardless, my first experience with a Bayonetta game, and Bayonetta 3 specifically, was very positive. So, next up, let me take you back to France and my time with Amicia and Hugo and A Plague Tale Requiem. Gamers, last week I talked to you about the first 8 hours or so that I played in A Plague Tale Requiem, and it was kind of a roller coaster for me, an up and down experience, but by the end of it all, it ended up being a very positive one. And this past week I did drop another 4 hours and 40 minutes, just shy of that 5 hour mark. And in that time, I was able to complete chapters 5 and 6. And according to the PlayStation tracker on PS5, I was 80% complete in chapter 7. I really was trying to finish that 7th chapter before my play session ended. Unfortunately, I was not able to do that. I just ran out of time. But I will tell you, after having played what I've played in it and seeing what the trophy list is, I got to make that announcement. I told you guys I would do it. This game has officially become, for me, a Platinum Pursuit. Gamers, if it's the first time you're hearing me say Platinum Pursuit, earlier in the season, I brought up a new segment that I come up with called Platinum Pursuit, where if there is a game that I am officially declaring, I am going after that Platinum Trophy, meaning get all trophies in the game to unlock that beautiful, amazing Platinum Trophy as the cherry on top, that I will announce it in the show as a Platinum Pursuit. So that is definitely the case now for A Plague Tale Requiem. I am 100% committed to getting that Platinum and will pursue it accordingly. So, what specifics did I experience this past week in this almost 5 hour play session? So you remember last week, if you heard that episode, I had a few issues with the game. Didn't like the voiceover connecting up with the lip syncing. It just wasn't there. There were some frame rate droppage issues. The graphics were kind of questionable to me. Well, by the end of the last play session, I told you that I figured out the graphics. I had the HDR turned up too bright. I fixed that. Graphics are amazing. I had no issues still. And most of the other problems are gone, but I did have very minimal, maybe once or twice, the frame rate droppage, just a little bit. But again, in 5 hours, once or twice, wasn't that bad. Didn't really take me out of the experience in that way to where it was a massive detriment to my experience. So as I progress through these chapters, oh man, the locations that you go to, there's this quarry that you explore, and just the different, the environments in these games, in A Plague Tale Innocence and Requiem, those are like the puzzles. The environments are the puzzles, and you use the environments to progress and figure out how to progress in that way and utilize your different alchemical abilities and just the rats that are in the area, the soldiers that are in certain areas. There's just all these things come together, and it's just done in a really unique and fun way. And the quarry was one of those areas in this play session, and it was just awesome. It was interior and exterior environments, rats and soldiers, pure just exploration and beautiful graphics and scenery. It was all of that rolled up into one chapter, and I loved it. In addition to not just enjoying the environment I was exploring and going through, there was also a lot of new additions to this game from its predecessor in the form of different abilities or weapons. One being, as has been shown off in pretty much every trailer, the crossbow. And I could not wait to get my hands on that crossbow, see how it controlled and how it felt to control it, and what utilizations I could have for it within the game world, within those environmental puzzles. as I talked about earlier, and man, I was not disappointed. There are so many different ways you can use that crossbow. I will tell you though, you got to be careful to not overuse it because you have very, very limited ammo and those bolts that you have to use. And there are some situations where you're going to have to use those bolts for puzzle solving purposes. But don't be too worried about it because typically this developer is very good about supplying you nearby with the ingredients or in this case bolts that you'll need. But regardless, I would say always try to have some bolts on hand. Now, I didn't think it controlled that bad. I will say it's very quick on the draw. So if you're not ready to shoot, just be careful with the way you play your hands and your fingers with the trigger buttons, because it could be a very quick shot and you might waste a shot, and that always sucks. Now, I will say, in addition to the crossbow, and this is another form of weapon, but it's a new ability for Hugo, and it was one that I loved. It's one that you kind of start to play with at the end of the first game in Innocence, but now it has become, at this point in this game, a normal ongoing ability, and that is to control the rat hordes. And the way you do it in this game is from a first-person perspective within the horde, and it's just awesome, to be honest with you, going through the map, finding and pinpointing and taking out different soldiers. I got to be honest, it's kind of gleeful. But the caveat to it that I like is you can't just freely do this. You have to also monitor a bar or a meter that fills up every soldier that you kill. And what that is basically it's Hugo's sanity. You can't let it go all the way full or else it'll kill Hugo, basically. So you don't want that to happen. You got to moderate the usage of it within a given area or map. And I think that was a very smart move on the developer's part. So I definitely love that new ability. And there's also been a lot of new characters that I've met throughout the course of these last few chapters. And Arno and Sophia are their name, the two characters specifically that I'll mention here that I just got to say, I love their characters. They are awesome characters. And that's one thing that I have loved about this series now with two entries is the way the characters are written and even acted and their voice actors and animated. It's just so well done that you can't help with some of these characters either hate them on the villain side or love them on the hero side, if you will. So Sophia and Arno, awesome new additions to the cast of characters in this saga. And I very much appreciate the two of them and can't wait to see more of how their story develops and between their relationships with Hugo and Amicia as well. And just in general, just let me just say that story has been just enrapturing me the last few chapters. As I said last week, I was kind of, that's exactly how I felt for the first two chapters. As chapter 3 started getting going and then chapter 4, it was like, whoo. And then by the time I quit last week, I didn't want to quit. I wanted to keep going. And it was, again, the same feeling this week. So that's definitely the sign of a great game when you don't want to put down the controller. A Playtale Requiem, no surprise there with how good that first game was. If you want to know how good I thought that was, definitely check out my review for it right here on this channel. And that was my time this past week with a Playtale Requiem. Now, let me discuss quite a few different games that I touched on briefly in this past week, all on Xbox Game Pass. So gamers, as I said, I will touch very briefly on these three games. It was one of those weeks where a lot of things had come out on Game Pass that I was very interested in at least trying them and checking them out. And the first one of those games was The Legend of Tian Ding. And I played about an hour of it. And it's this classic side-scrolling beat-em-up style game that has this really cool manga style to its graphics and environments. They're 3D, they're not cel-shaded, but the way that the manga inspiredness of it, it screams it. It's right there. And they actually utilize manga as a way to transition the story as opposed to traditional cutscenes. So where there would normally be a cutscene, it zooms out, the camera does, and it's kind of like a page out of a manga. And you see the different panels of a manga page. And it goes right to left, just like you would read a manga. And the pages turn and so on and so forth. And it kind of zooms back in when you resume control of the main character of Tian Ding. And he's kind of a folk hero in this area of Taiwan that you're playing through. And I really loved it. I mean, the abilities were really cool. The combat was a lot of fun. And there's just so many options. The platforming was that classic 2D side-scrolling platforming. You got secrets in certain areas. Very, very akin to a Metroidvania style of game. And I very much enjoyed playing it. Whether or not I actually get back to it or, hey, I'm going to actually focus and beat this game, I can't honestly tell you that. I can just say that if you were curious about it and you like that kind of style of game, if anything I've said about it piques your interest, you might want to check it out if you have Game Pass. Now, it also is on PS5 or PS4. You can play it on that. You don't have to have Game Pass to play the game. So definitely, if anything sounds interesting there, definitely check it out. I think it's some good stuff. Now, speaking of Metroidvania, this second game that I checked out on Game Pass also came out this past week on it, and it was called Ghost Song. Again, a 2D side-scroller, very much, I would say, this developer's version of Metroid, just because the main character that you play as has an arm cannon slash gun, if you will, just like Samus Aran. And as you're going through, it's just the world and the vibe of it feels very Metroid to me. I only played about a half hour of this game. I will say it's got a very beautiful art style to its graphics, and it 100% earns that Metroidvania moniker to its gameplay style, just in the way that you explore the environment and move forward and whatnot. It's the most frustrating thing for me was I would probably like this game a lot more if it wasn't for the enemies. And I had read before trying out the game myself that the enemies were challenging. Okay, well, I don't mind a challenge, but does this mean we're talking like Demon Souls, Dark Souls, Bloodborne, like that could be on the verge of annoying challenging, or just, all right, man, you can't just go in and button mash? Well, I won't say they're on the verge of like Bloodborne or anything like that, but it's one of those things where these enemies get the right hit on you or two and you're dead. And that can be very frustrating to me, at least in a lot of games that I play. A sense of progression is very important to me. So if I'm sitting there and I go forward 5 minutes, no checkpoint, and an enemy hits me once or twice and I'm dead, and I start back over at the beginning, 5 minutes I have to do again, that gets old to me after a while. That frustrates me. So that is very much the kind of style you can expect from this game. And, you know, who knows, maybe I just suck, but at this style of game, but I enjoy what I played. It's just like, if the enemies weren't one or two hit kills on you, I probably would put more into it or have enjoyed it more. But either way, that was my time with Ghost Song. But the third and final Game Pass game that I played this past week is one that I've been wanting to play for a very, very long time. It originally released on PS4 as an exclusive to it and has since re-released as a PS5 and Series X upgrade on the PS Plus, as well as on Xbox Game Pass, and that game is Amnesia Rebirth. Now, Amnesia is a series that's been around forever, and I did dabble in the original years ago. There was the collection that had released, and I had purchased that. It was like $5. So I was like, all right, everybody always talks so highly about this game. I love horror. I want to check something out. Let me check it out. I played very briefly the first game. I couldn't really get into it. But this Amnesia Rebirth always just looked awesome to me. And gamers, I was not disappointed. I probably played about an hour and a half of this game, and I loved it. I mean, the story, the setting, the gameplay, it was just all what I look for in this style of game. So it's a horror game, and it's set in March of 1937 and follows Anastasia Tazi Trianon, who is a French explorer who's on this expedition in colonial Africa. Now, at the beginning of the game, you're on this plane, you're on a flight with your husband and a crew that's going out there to just explore this area and search these ruins, right? Well, of course, the plane crashes. She wakes up and you're all alone. The crew, the passengers, there's nobody there. So you get your way off the plane and you find some notes that were left for you by your husband. And it's basically this breadcrumb trail that you follow of his notes and different evidence along the way of the other crew members, as well as other people that have come before those crew members many, many years ago. Now, I will say that it's a first-person perspective, and it's very much focused around exploration and story. So there's really not combat to be spoken of. So if you are very much about atmosphere, scares, horror in general, story, reading a lot of notes and stuff, that this is the game for you. And it was the game for me because I absolutely loved it. Once you get into the cave system of the ruins, the atmosphere is just, oh man. I mean, there was a couple times that this game got me. There's just stuff going on and sounds and flashbacks, and it's really an interesting story too that seems to be going on in the background, and I really want to know what else is going on and what the specifics are of what is in these caves. What is the backstory of this main character? What happened here all these centuries ago? Because there's just a lot of like relics and cave paintings and different things like that that you see as you're exploring, and then there's just this dimensional hopping aspect to it. There's just a lot of really crazy stuff. So it was very, very interesting to me, and I cannot wait to continue my progression through it. So that was the Game Pass games that I tried out this past week. Now, let's go check out the last game that I had time in, and it was a doozy. Fatal Frame, Maiden of Blackwater. Gamers, me and the Fatal Frame franchise go way back, all the way back to PlayStation 2 when the first game released. Played it, loved it, beat it. The second game came out and I never played it. Never played any other game since. But I loved that first game and I've always kind of kicked myself for not getting back into the series over the generations and over the years. Well, last year, Koei Tecmo to be specific, was nice enough to remaster and re-release Fatal Frame, Maiden of Blackwater, which was initially like a Wii release when it came out, a Wii U, one of those, and didn't matter to me. I was all about playing a brand new, to me, what is a brand new Fatal Frame game, and updated and remastered for what I ended up purchasing it on was the Series X. And I played about 3 hours this past week, and man, it was an awesome experience. I was able to play through the prologue, and the first two drops is what they call them. And I am on drop 4, or technically 3, because they call the first one a prologue. But regardless, first off, I got to say the graphics in the game, being a remaster of a Wii game, it's honestly not as bad as you might think. The character models are amazing for what the console was that they came from, to be honest with you. You can tell the developer definitely put more focus on the character models as opposed to the environments. But the lighting is also really well done, and the environments are not bad either. They're just noticeably not of this current generation, if that makes sense. But either way, it's still a very fun game to go through. The controls are a little shoddy, I will admit that, but I can look past some ganky controls and, you know, not the greatest graphics in the world if the experience and the story and everything else is running at full speed in a positive way for me, and that was the case for Maiden of Blackwater. The prologue, it sets up the story really well, and I just loved the premise of it. Mount Hakami is basically the main focal point of this game, and where the Maiden of Blackwater herself, or many Maidens of Blackwater, is this pool at the base of the mountain that's basically, if she sees you, you see her, make eye contact, you're cursed, you're probably going to die. But Mount Hakami has got a lot of story around it, and you read a lot of that story in different notes and documents and newspaper articles and journal entries and all kinds of stuff, even cutscenes talking with other characters. You learn a lot about Mount Hakami before you actually start going out to this location. But the best part about it is the atmosphere in this game. The music and the atmosphere are absolutely terrifying. I mean, some of the sound effects of the ghost, I'll admit, are not the greatest. They're kind of corny. Oh, you know, whatever. But I don't care because they still terrify me when they pop up out of nowhere, or even just a silent ghost is that much more terrifying. And if you don't know Fatal Frame, the whole premise of it is you fight ghosts with this special spiritual camera. And it's actually really intricate and very detailed in the way that you combat these ghosts with a camera. Different type of film does different things and exercises different ghosts different ways. Some film, the most basic, doesn't even exercise ghosts. You have combos you can build up. You have timing, which is very important, whether it's the framing of the different orbs of weakness that form around a ghost as you continue to chip away at their HP or whatnot. There's just so many different intricacies, as I'm sure you can tell as I'm starting to spout off all this stuff. But I had a lot of fun with it. And, you know, Mount Hakami, the craziest thing about it is they kept driving home the fact that it draws in people who want to commit suicide. And there was a big focus around that and just suicide in general. And man, there was this main character as part of the story that meets up with the character that you play as, one of the characters. And let's just say there's a sad story going on there. But the cutscenes showing back to the past that are done in black and white are excellent. The voice acting is pretty decent. Just overall, I cannot talk enough positive about Fatal Frame Maiden in Black Mirror and my time with it this past week, which leads me into what I'll talk about next in my highlight of the week. Gamers, I think it's pretty obvious that I thoroughly enjoyed my time in Fatal Frame Maiden of Blackwater this past week, so my highlight of the week comes from my playtime in it, and specifically exploring what is known as the Unfathomable Forest. And it's a location that you go to in Drop 2 of Maiden of Blackwater, and it's right there at the base of Mount Akami, and I absolutely was enraptured, I will say, use that word again. I was enraptured with my experience exploring the Unfathomable Forest. Everything I love in video games is there. It's got the horror. There are ghosts that pop out of nowhere. And it's the pacing of it is what is so scary about it. It's so well done. I don't want you to think that you're just walking through and it's just jump scares either, because the developers know horror. It's not just about having a ghost that jumps out to attack you. It could just be a random in the moment that never happens before or again after camera adjustment, and boom, there's this disgustingly terrifying looking ghost standing behind your character you're controlling, and then it's real quick gone. And it's not there. You're walking through the forest and you hear these noises. And sometimes it's not what actually follows those noises, but it's the fact that nothing physically follows those noises. You never see anything. You just continue to hear rustling in the leaves and bushes and what sounds like footsteps. But there's never, not even a ghost or anything that follows to say, okay, that's where that was coming from. It was just amazing environmental design and pacing as far as the scares, I would say, go. The music was so well done. It was this terrifying orchestral, very low, slow horror theme. I tell you, the whole time it kept me on my toes. I mean, you're going through this forest at night and it's known to be a high area for suicides. And imagine this, for instance, you go off to the beaten path and there's a little dirt trail that leads to a tent. And it's a tent that you can tell has been left there for a while. The sleeping bag is kind of sitting there by itself. There's a note that's left outside of the sleeping bag. And the note details whoever's tent that was, the terrors that they experienced the last couple of nights they were alive. And then as you back out of reading the note, that sleeping bag that was poking out of the tent rustles just a little bit. And that's it. But it was just enough and just unexpected enough to be like, oh my God, let me get out of here. And then you go and you experience all these different things with the story and seeing, honestly, what was kind of disturbing. It was a very disturbing area too. Different ghosts that were committing suicide. It was like the ghosts of those that committed suicide jumping off the cliff. You would hear random screams here or there. I mean, it was just a very like, oh man, this area is intense, man. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. The different explorations and just the progression in the game, and I really, really enjoyed my time, as weird as that may sound to say, and the Unfathomable Forest. So now let's go open up my buried treasure gaming chest and see what kind of gaming tips I have for you in A Plague Tale Requiem. Gamers, just like in the first Plague Tale, there are upgrades, many upgrades that you can do for your equipment and your abilities alike. Well, in this buried treasure segment, I want to talk to you about upgrading your equipment and just specifically one branch of that equipment upgrade tree. And typically, this game, in a sense, They both required you to have tools, whether it was one tool to do an upgrade or more than one tool. Depending on the upgrade, you had to have tools. But just like in the first game, there is a way for you to get to a point where you don't have to have tools anymore. You have unlimited access to upgrade. You just have to have the resources that are required. So that is my buried treasure gaming tip for you this week. Is I can't stress enough and recommend enough. And the instruments tab is what it's called in Requiem. Upgrade that tab first, because you have to upgrade all three slots. That third slot is the one that gives you the ability to no longer require tools to upgrade anything. So my suggestion, I would highly recommend doing that first. Go ahead and knock that out, because then you never have to worry about getting to a tool bench or a workbench and not having a tool to upgrade what you want to upgrade. That I experienced in the first game, and it sucks. So I am here to tell you, I knew going into this game, nope, I am getting that immediately. And I would recommend and share that with you guys as well. Now, next up, let's check out my first accessory review in a long time as I give you my thoughts on the newly released Lunar Shift Xbox Series controller.
Accessory review.
Gamers, if you've listened to this show for a while, you know I profess myself to be the controller freak. I have an obsession when it comes to controllers. Xbox, PlayStation, doesn't matter. It's very hard for me to control myself when a new design or color comes out for either console manufacturer. I've controlled myself pretty good, I feel like, for the majority of this year. And as far as Xbox goes, I have not bought an Xbox Series controller since last year when the 20th anniversary controller came out. But when I got the email from Xbox for this Lunar Shift controller and the way they marketed it and sold it to me, I mean, they really did a good job selling this thing to me with their descriptions and the pictures, and I just couldn't help myself. I had to immediately purchase this thing and get it in my hands. And I was very happy to do that once I opened the box. You know, sometimes these things don't look the same in your hands as they do online in the pictures, right? Well, that's what I'm here for, is to kind of tell you what my thoughts on it were, design-wise, feel-wise, what's different about it than other controllers, etc., etc. So first off, this is 95% the same controller that you would get from a base model Series X, except for one thing. It does have rubberized grips on the back of where your hands rest and hold and wrap around that bottom of the controller. And I've had a few controllers like this, the most recent being last year's 20th anniversary Xbox controller, and honestly, guys, I love these rubberized grips. There's a certain weight and sense of control and lack of movement of your hands that comes with it. Like, I mean, it's genuinely what it does its job, the grip part of it. It, even though there are on the back of DualSense controllers and the other standard Series X controllers, there are etchings in there that are considered grips. They do help, but it is not the same as having a rubberized grip. And the cool thing about this specific controller, those rubberized grips, they're kind of like a cloudy mix of the colors of gray, white, and black. And the reason why this controller is even called the Lunar Shift, it has everything to do with the moon, of course. And the best thing about that email that Xbox sent me was the reason why it was called Lunar Shift and designed in the way that it was. So first off, it's all about the colors, right? And the shift part of its name. And I'm just going to kind of go through the controller and explain it to you guys. So the bumpers and triggers, they are all kind of this gray or silver white, a matte style, as well as the D-pad and the view and menu buttons. Your analog sticks, they're a darker gray, but they're still light. And the face buttons, they have that same grayish white in the backgrounds, with the A, B, X, and Y being a darker gray. Now the back of the controller is all black, and those rubberized grips, they just kind of accent very well off of that black. The best part of this controller, in my opinion though, is the shift aspect of it. And it shifts from this shiny metallic looking gold or silver, depending on which way that you're coming at it from your viewpoint and how you tilt it. So you can kind of tilt it left and right and it goes from gold to silver back and forth. And it just looks really, really cool. They're very subtle gold and silver, so it's not like overpowering or very shiny metallic in your face. It was very well designed in that way. And, you know, Microsoft said that it was done this way to mimic the shifting of the moon. Depending on how you look at it, it can appear goldish or silverish. So I thought that was very cool. And, you know, ultimately, functionally as a controller, it's the same great Xbox Series controller that you can play and use on any other type of controller. So there's really no complaints there. And overall, I really dug the design and style of this controller and would say that if you're in the market for a new one or you just like collecting them like me, then you're really going to want to pick this up. If you were none of these things, you'll probably be okay to pass this one by. So I would say for me, it was a definite purchase. And I'll go with the overall score of a 9.75 out of 10. Now, let's go check out this week's Captain's Decree. Gamers, as stated earlier in the episode, I wanted to discuss with you the price of PSVR 2 and what my thoughts on it are. So here we are, this week's Captain's Decree. Does PSVR 2 cost too much? So it's a very debatable topic, in my opinion, guys. There's the personal feelings that I have. There are the mass opinions online of many people. There is the opinion of my good friend Graveyard Gamer over at the Graveyard Gamer podcast, right here on Anchor, many other platforms as well. If you like my show, check his out. I promise you'll love it. But as far as my personal opinion, we'll start there. Do I think that it costs too much? I think that I have to go ultimately when I sit there and I've really thought about it. Yes. Now, the reason why I say that is because something that me and Graveyard Gamer talked about, something he said to me, and I thought about it, and I you know, it's not that I didn't recognize this from the outset of the announcement of the price, but the fact that it's $550, that is more expensive in the US than the PS5 itself. I understand and respect the technology that is in this thing, and I understand that that's what we're paying for, is the technology that's inside of it, the experiences that we get from that technology. I get that. I respect that. But at the same time, it's like, wow, they're asking me to pay more for that than they would for a PS5. Whew. On top of that, I get the PSVR on PS4. That was $300 to $400, depending on where you found it, what you got bundled with it, this and that. So again, I understand that that technology is now well outdated compared to what we have now. And I understand the Sense controllers, they probably cost a lot to produce, and the interconnectivity between the headset and the Sense controllers and the way everything works. I get it. But I still, honestly, maybe I was naive, but I was really hoping for a $400 price tag. So to come out and hear that it's $550, you add in tax. Plus, I wanted to get Horizon Call of the Mountain, so I'd probably get that $600 bundle. So now I'm paying $600 plus tax, so I'm pushing $700 for one game and this VR equipment. So I then think about, for me, practically, does it make sense to put that kind of money out for this when am I going to really be choosing this method of gaming over the traditional method of gaming? Just playing a game on my PS5 or on my Series X or whatever the Switch. More than likely not. I'll probably play the games when they first come out or try out Horizon or play through Horizon. And that's the other thing. How long are the games going to be? Most of the games, from what I've been told, on the PSVR, on PS4, were in the realm of like 3 to 5 hours long. So how long are these experiences going to be? That's the other piece. The price of admission alone is $550. So is that price of admission worth it? To me, in my current situation, as far as gaming is concerned, it's not a financial thing, but just practically, logically, does it make sense for me to drop that kind of money on this thing right now? Honestly, for me, gamers, it doesn't. If it was $400, I don't think I would have really thought too much about it. But asking me to drop that extra $150, it's a mental hurdle for me at this point in time. I'm not saying that I won't get it. I'm just saying I'm thinking about these things out loud with you guys right now. And that's the big piece for me is it going to make sense? It comes out the end of February. I'm absolutely looking forward to Hogwarts Legacy. That comes out in February. Looks like it's going to be a very time-consuming game. I'm probably going to be wrapped up in that. Not to mention other games that are coming out in March, like Resident Evil 4 and other games in the month of February. There are other traditional style games that I'm going to be wanting to play over anything that I've seen right now so far on PSVR 2. And that's the other piece. As far as the games that are available or that may be available in the launch window, we don't even know if they're going to be available at the end of February. Is there anything there that I'm going to be wanting to play more than anything else on a traditional method of console? And for me, the answer is no. So I, at its base, do I think it costs too much? Yes, I do. Now, online, there is, well, you know, you got to understand the technology that's in it. I do. I get it. I still feel that for right now, in this market, and everything else for me as a gamer, I think that it's just, the price is a little bit too high for me. Now, you guys might be like, ah, it don't matter to me. I'm going to get it. The games are going to come. And that may be true. But for me, it may, in fact, unfortunately be, as much as I told you guys at the beginning of the episode and have for the better part of a year now, how excited I am for PSVR 2 and don't want to miss the ship on this one, I may, in fact, at least initially, miss that ship. So who knows? Maybe further on down the line next year, there'll be a price drop or a sale or something that comes out game-wise that just absolutely I cannot live without. I have got to get this via PSVR 2 to experience this game. Maybe that'll happen, and then it won't even matter to me at that point that it's $550. But for now, do I think it's a little bit too expensive? Yes. That'll do it for this week's episode. I hope you've enjoyed your time aboard the SS Gamer. You can join its crew by reaching out to me at lostatseagaming365@gmail.com, as well as searching for Hulking Yoda on the Xbox, PlayStation, and Nintendo Switch networks. You can also find me on social media, on Instagram, at lostatseagaming, and on Twitter, at lostatseagamin, the number one. Thank you for listening, and until the sea says otherwise, we'll keep sailing.